This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast, brought to you by Jayhawk Slant. We go behind the scenes to bring you the inside scoop from Les Miles and his staff, the KU players, and recruits. Here are your hosts of the Football Podcast, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome into another game day edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We have another football-only episode ready for you, rolling for the second straight week. We're going to get into some basketball soon, we promise. But for now, we have an amazing episode just for you. We're going to rehash the Baylor game, look ahead to Oklahoma State, preview the matchup with the Pokes, and we have a great lineup of guests today. KU football sideline reporter and Jayhawk alumni Brandon McAnderson will be joining us, along with Travis Clark, who coached new Kansas freshman quarterback Jalen Daniels when he was in high school in California. And we also will be joined by one of the top recruits left on the board in Jarrell Boykins. With that, let me welcome in my man, my sidekick, partner, and publisher of JayhawkSlant.com, Mr. John Kirby. John, how are you today?
Good, Randy. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm excited. I'm loving this fall weather. It is absolutely beautiful here in Kansas City. We've got, you know, seemingly football everywhere you look right now. You know, we got word the Pac-12 is coming back on. There's high school action on Thursday and Friday nights, college football on all day Saturday and almost all Saturday night. The NFL on Sunday had that unbelievable game between the Chiefs and Ravens on Monday night. I mean, if you're a football fanatic like I am, your wife doesn't like you much right now. Just like mine does.
Let me tell you what else is going on. The Major League Baseball playoffs started, okay? And here's why I know that. Because both of my sons are supposed to be doing online high school, right?
Supposed to be.
They're supposed to be. But yet they know the score in every inning, in every play, what's going on these baseball games that started at 11 a.m. today. So I'm thinking that while they're supposed to be doing this online schooling, there's some MLB on the sidelines, and I think the MLB is probably getting more attention from them than the actual online schoolwork. So I told my wife, I said, I wish we could have like one of those cameras in their room that you see these people now. You know, Randy, I'll tell you what's changed. I remember back in the day when our kids were growing up, and they would be little ones, and they'd be in the crib, and everybody would be out and drinking a cold one in the driveway or something. We used to have these little listening devices. Well, now I see these younger couples, and they have these apps on their phone where they can just click on and see what their baby's doing in the crib and watching it.
That's crazy.
We need to get one of those for my high school sons to make sure they're actually doing their online schoolwork, because I'm betting that they aren't.
You know, it's only a matter of time before you're going to go up there and those kids are going to have set up with multiple monitors with multiple games over here on the two screens on the left. And then they have the one on the right where the teacher can only see them, where it'll look like they're focused and doing what they're supposed to be doing in class.
Yeah, it's coming, I'm sure.
Well, let's take a quick look back at the loss to Baylor. Kirby, I know you've gone back and watched it again. And I'm interested to get your thoughts after looking back Saturday night against the Bears. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I thought, Randy, was this is the start that they need, right? I mean, they come out, they get up, they look like they're playing a little defense, they're moving the ball. There was the throw deep to Parchment that they just missed on. There was the throw down the up route down the sideline that Velton Gardner bounced off his hands. But still, even after that, at halftime, it's 17-7. So you're sitting there and you're thinking, we got a ball game. 17-7, the Jayhawks are in this thing. It's within reach. And what do? They go out, they kick it off. Baylor returns the friggin' first kick right after halftime, and it's 24-7. Yep. And you go back, and when I went back and watched, I try to think what's going on the sideline. and this is still a somewhat of a fragile program. Les Miles is trying to change the culture, the mindset, and there's a lot of young kids playing. There's kids that haven't experienced a lot of winning. So all of a sudden, they come out of the half. They think they're in a football game. The thing kicks off, and next thing you know, it's 24-7. And I guarantee you, I wasn't there. I haven't talked to anybody about what the sideline was like. But I guarantee it's like a balloon just being slowly deflated. You're thinking, we're in this, and then that hits. And it's tough for those kids. It'll change. Okay, the mentality will change, the toughness will change, but I guarantee you it's the whole story again. Are we really going through this again? I thought Jalen Daniels was good. I really did. I thought he showed some toughness. I know he missed some reads. He missed some passes. He probably didn't run it like he should have. There were some times where he might have been able to keep it. I thought Baylor really attacked on defense. And that's good, yes, because Daniels is going to have to learn what that feels like. And this was a good first game for him. You know, he got licked and he jumped back up and he had a smile, and it was not a good day for the KU starting linebackers and the special teams. I didn't think the special teams was that great. And I didn't like the way the KU starting linebackers played. So, you know, it's over. It's a learning experience. I saw some better signs from that than I did Coastal Carolina. So maybe they can take on that, build on it, and move into Oklahoma State.
Let's hope. Let's hope. As we move ahead and start to look ahead to the Pokes, you know, let's talk about some of the guests that we have lined up for today. One of them with us for the second straight week, somebody that we had a lot of great feedback on his first appearance, KU football sideline reporter Brandon McAnderson joins us now to share his thoughts on the loss to Baylor and look ahead to the matchup with Oklahoma State.
Back by popular demand, a man who knows his KU football, former Jayhawk running back and turned sideline reporter Brandon McAnderson. B-Mac, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Enjoying this weather, enjoying some football.
Okay, so I was thinking back to your style of running and how you were as a running back, and for some reason I kept thinking to the 2007 game against Texas A&M. Remember that big back they had?
Yeah, Jaworski Lane, maybe?
Jaworski Lane. I couldn't remember him, and I kept remembering they went for it on like 4th and 2 with the game on the line. I think James Holt and a group of guys were there and hit him for like a no gain, and that was like the biggest play of the game. I don't know why I thought about that.
Oh, yeah, that was a huge play. And I know Jaworski Lane because I used to be like, man, I'm better than this guy. This guy gets all his attention. I'm better than this dude. So that's why I knew him, but I knew his name right away.
Okay, so I was thinking about this too, I was thinking about the Kansas offensive line. From what I've seen the first couple games and what you've seen, I was going back to some of those teams you played on, and I was thinking about guys' names, and I can't remember them all, but Ochoa and Travis Dombach and Bob Whitaker and Matt Thompson. I know there were others in there, but guys that weren't highly recruited and guys that weren't NFL guys. But, you know, those coaches on those teams you played on found ways to mold those guys into solid offensive line somehow. Can this offensive line develop throughout the season?
I believe they can. And I think what the difference between the coaches' philosophy is what you're seeing. You know, Mangino liked to get athletes and then bulk them up. So, you know, you walk by Travis Dombach and David Ochoa, and some of these guys right now, they're probably 215 pounds. You know, these were guys that were naturally 220, 230, you know, that played 290, 280, 300. So he liked the idea that I'm going to take an athletic guy and I'm going to put weight on him. Well, Coach Beatty liked SEC style, you know, big lower bodies, big physical guys, and try to maul you up front. And I think that's going to be the path for Coach Miles as well. So I think it's just a philosophical difference. Now, do I think these guys can develop? I do. Bostic is more of a Mangino type. You know, you take a tight end, you know, comes in at 6'6", 270, 260, and now he's 6'6", 290, playing that right tackle position. So he's playing a new position, and I thought he had moments where, you know, he's just learning how to fit and how to, you know, how physical the game is. But that offensive line makes huge strides. I thought Jacoby Lott was a lot better. Malik Clark was definitely better. And, you know, knowing that he threw up on that that touchdown to Parchment on the field, you got to wonder about his health. I mean, because he was not himself in terms of the player that we saw last year. He was much more similar to what we saw when he played left guard in this last game, where he was physical and able to protect the passer and did some good things.
All right, give me your overall thoughts on Jalen Daniels, and what did you see from the team in the Baylor game?
Jalen Daniels, I'll start with Jalen Daniels. He is the most talented quarterback we've had here in as long a time as I can remember. I don't want to destroy, I don't want to blow up your podcast by saying he's more talented than Todd Reese. But in ways, he is. I mean, his arm is live. I mean, the ball flies off of his arm. Those timing routes that he's making and completing outside the numbers, turn on a college football game and tell me which quarterbacks are doing that. And you won't see it. And it's because they're not asking him to, because it's difficult. And that's the kind of arm strength that he has. So I think his athletic talent is unreal. He's 17 years old, playing against a Dave Aranda defense, which is a high-pressure, man-to-man defense. And you never know where guys are going to come from. I saw more corner blitzes in that game than I've seen, from the last five Kansas opponents altogether. So I think it was a difficult task in terms of getting ready for that defense. And I thought he handled it pretty well. The O-line at times struggled picking up blitzes. But the guy's a playmaker. That play that he had down near the red zone where it ended up incomplete to Gardner, that was an incredible athletic play. He reminds me a lot of Mario Kinsey and Dylan Smith, because Dylan Smith had that howitzer arm in the early 2000s, and then Kinsey had that slick. Guys that were seniors when I arrived on campus told me Kinsey used to rip through people's gloves. He threw the ball so hard. So those are the kind of things that he reminded me of. I think there's no question he's the most talented person that we've had here for a very long time at the quarterback position. As far as the team as a whole, I think the secondary, I think that's becoming a real thing. And I know that you can look at the numbers and you can attribute this to that and that to this, and you can say, well, they fumbled or they ran kicks back or the numbers are skewed. But I'm looking at the players themselves. I think Davon Ferguson moving up into that nickel linebacker hybrid spot was a big, big upgrade just because he was so active making tackles in the box. I think Kenny Logan, as a true sophomore, is on the verge of being something great just because his physicality. He plays so hard. I mean, he was one of the difference in the – when they put him in the Coastal Carolina game, he made a difference. And then if you look at the DBs collectively, Karan Prunty is excellent. I mean, that guy is – his man coverage has been incredible. His ability to identify, read the quarterback's eyes and zone has been incredible. Elijah Jones was awesome. He made two or three incredible open field tackles. I counted about five balls to wide receivers and maybe one of them over 10-plus yards. So I think that what they're building in the secondary is legitimate. And then furthermore, on the defensive line, I think you're seeing the same kind of thing. You're seeing a lot of young people, Harris, Terry, Stephen Parker, people that are freshmen, either true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, or sophomores, that, they are not good yet from a production standpoint. But everything that you need to be good, they have those things. And I know it's not, I'm not campaigning for people to love college, love Kansas football. Kansas football is family to me. So I look at these things, and I'm optimistic about these things because I love it. And I think I see things in this defense based on the age of these people that I think are future building blocks.
All right, you're going to be down on the sideline Saturday. You're finally going to get to see some fans in the stands for the Oklahoma State game. What do you want to see from the team this Saturday, and what are some of the keys in this game?
I think I want to see continuation of what's happening. And I don't mean like what's happening from the outside. If you look at the outside, you're going to see a disappointing loss to Coastal Carolina, and you're going to see a disappointing loss to Baylor. But what I mean by that is I think they need consistency in competition. They need to be able to come out and compete every Saturday and give themselves a chance to win. The Baylor final score was, a monstrosity. But, I mean, that was a 17-7 game at halftime. They returned that kick, went three and out, but then they made Baylor drive the football to get to 31-7. It was 31-7 into the fourth quarter. So I think they need to be able to compete in that way, because in the Big 12, holding teams to 28, 24, 31, heading into that last frame, that's about where you need to be to give yourself a chance to win. So when you have a young quarterback starting the road, he's going to be a little bit, uncomfortable with the circumstances. So you hope to see him. I mean, he's very confident. So I think you're just going to see him get more comfortable because he's used to seeing it. But defensively, I would like to see that competitive nature carry over because they got a big challenge and an All-American running back to face.
Well, Brandon, you are tremendous at what you do and following KU football. And like I said, we had requests to get you back on. So I really appreciate it, and I know our listeners do, and we'll definitely catch up soon.
All right, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon.
Some pretty strong words there from BMAC on KU freshman quarterback Jalen Daniels. John, what do you think? Do you agree with what BMAC is saying about the young quarterback, and what do you see for him ahead?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I like him a lot. I think he's got talent. You know, Randy, it hit me. When I went back and watched the game, I'll tell you who there's a resemblance to. Michael Cummings. I see a little bit of Michael Cummings in this.
Body, interesting.
Yeah, body style. Now, Cummings was a little bigger. I don't think Cummings threw the ball with the velocity that he does, but Cummings could run. Cummings could run,
yes.
And he was tough, and he would take you on head-to-head. And I saw some of the similarities between the two. Cummings had an infectious personality, which I hear that Daniels does. You know, you saw Daniels smiling over there. You know, Randy, back in the day when I played baseball, I was a pitcher. And I remember my pitching coach always telling me, listen, you can dial it up there and start to pop that mitt, and it looks cool and it sounds good when the mitt pops. But when you take a couple miles an hour off, you're better. He said, because when you let up just a little, you're better at spotting it. You can keep it on the corners. You can run it. Your control's better. You can run it inside on right-handed guys. Well, I thought about that when I went back and watched Jalen Daniels, because I'm thinking, this kid's got a rocket now. I mean, he makes some throws across the field that were on the money, and they had velocity and they had speed. And I posted this on the message board, but everything comes out a little hot, you know? So I think what's going to happen is he's going to learn. Dearman's going to work with him. He's going to develop a little bit of touch. The long ball to Parchment that he just missed on, it was kind of on a line for a deep ball. I mean, he threw that thing 60 yards in the air. But
there was no air underneath.
No air. You're right. So he's going to learn there's some of these times where you might have a running back going on an out, you know, a wheel pattern, and he's got to just put it on top of a linebacker or something. So I think those things, you know, will come. The thing I loved about it is I saw two or three times he got licked. And I'm telling you, I went, oh, man, is he going to get up? Is he going to be okay? You better get Miles Kendrick warming up here. And
exactly.
Daniels got up, had a little bit of a kind of a smile, a little bit of a laugh, like, hey, you know, he felt it, but you know, he
looked
got,
like he was having fun out there.
Yeah, he was having
fun. He was
fun.
Taking shots.
Absolutely. So I love the smile. I love the fact that he showed he can take a hit. Now, we don't want to see a lot of those. Now, some of those were cheap shots, I felt, you know, from Baylor. I really did. But you know, all in all, you send the kid on the road. He faces a Dave Aranda defense from Baylor. They're bringing the heat. They've got some pretty good-looking athletes on that Baylor defense. And you know what? I thought the kid hung in there and played pretty well for his first game.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about some of the throws, and it will, you could see just the RPMs on the ball coming out of his hand. It's a different kind of ball than we have seen from a KU quarterback in quite some time. And, you know, he showed what I think maybe any 17-year-old is going to show in their first college action. He looked like he was playing sped up. And as the season goes on, he'll start, like you said, he's going to spend time with Dearman. He's going to see it on film, start to see some of the things he missed, realize that, you know, how to make that throw to Velton Gardner on the sideline, which may have been more of a drop by Gardner, but, you know, they both had a hand in it, obviously. But the potential is there, and fans have to be excited about that. You know, one thing that you talked about with BMAC are some of the, you know, the good old days when KU had those really solid offensive line groups that weren't built with superstars, weren't built with highly recruited kids. And, you know, I remember those teams, and looking at Jalen Daniels, I kind of wonder if that's how they're going to have to build it again.
Well, Randy, you know, I brought that up with BMAC because I was thinking back to 2003, 2004, 2005, and leading up to those Orange Bowl teams, a lot of people don't understand the toughness that those teams played with to get to the Orange Bowl. I mean, the Orange Bowl didn't happen real easily. It didn't go overnight. It wasn't like a snap of a fingers and you got a team going to the Orange Bowl. And I got to thinking, I don't remember everybody. I know Cantrell was on some of the later teams, and I know Anthony Collins made the adjustment from defensive end to offensive line. But when you look back, you know, there was the Bob Whitaker. I remember one game I was sitting there, and he's running out on the field. No, I'm talking limping out on the field. And then he's limping back.
I was going to say, Bob couldn't run.
Well, no, Bob Whitaker played one year like on a bad leg the whole year. And then, you know, Travis Dombach and Ochoa and Cesar Rodriguez.
Danny Lewis.
Yeah, now Danny was in the earlier teams, okay? But, true. I mean, you know, yeah, Matt Thompson, and you had Cesar Rodriguez, who, you know, I remember standing up next to Cesar Rodriguez, and I'm thinking, this guy is not. He is not 1 pound over 270 pounds. There's no way. But The bottom line is, Randy, those teams had some guys like Mark Mangino, who was an O-line guy. John Reagan was an O-line guy. Ed Warner was an O-line guy. And They found ways to take kids who were not NFL prospects. They were not upper three-star recruits. And they found a way to take them and mold them into an offensive line. And I think that's what's going to have to be done here. Listen, I don't know that group that I just mentioned back then is any more talented. They're definitely not as big as some of these guys now. So there's a way to make them work in unison and develop a toughness and mentality to where that offensive – I remember that offensive line in 2006 was just – they were just a nice group of guys. And they ended up – John Cornish led the Big 12 in rushing. And I look back at that 2006 line and go, wow, that was pretty impressive that they were able to do that. So I really believe that, you know, Meadows is going to have to find a way to show that he can bring these guys together, because we've seen it done at Kansas before.
Okay, we've talked a lot about Jalen Daniels so far. Let's head back over to the studio line and welcome in Travis Clark, who coached Jalen in high school back in California. He's got some great insight into the KU true freshman quarterback.
The Jayhawks started true freshman Jalen Daniels at quarterback against Baylor, and we're going to be joined by Travis Clark, who coached him at Lawndale High in California. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. I appreciate you joining us. So I got a question to ask you. Jalen was 17 when he started for the Jayhawks, so does that mean he was 15 when he took you guys to the CIF state title?
Jalen was 15 years old when he took us to the state title. The kid was green, wide-eyed, obviously with a lot of talent, but he's just so wise, you know, beyond his age. He's such a mature young man. He's so focused and determined. So we were excited about it. It's a no-brainer. Jalen, we knew he was going to be a successful quarterback, but in terms of playing for Kansas, oh my God, we weren't expecting to start this early.
I'm sure you watched the game on Saturday. What did you think of your former quarterback?
You know, just to be honest and as humbly as possible, you know, there's some things Jalen's got to clean up, but obviously we got to remember that he's a freshman. He was in high school just 100 days ago. He was in high school running into my office, but I thought he played very well. I have to tell you, I love Coach Dierman. I think the way Coach Dierman is handling this young man, you know, that future is bright in that program. You could just see the flashes of brilliance that he's got in his brain in terms of offense. And Jalen's the perfect quarterback for Coach Dierman's offense because he's calm, he's collective, he's strong. You know, he's over 200 pounds right now. So he took some big shots. John, I was really nervous about that. He took some big shots, but just happy that he got up.
For all the Kansas fans that are listening, just break down Jalen's game. You know, what you saw from him and what people can expect from him at Kansas.
One thing you can expect from him, I had a conversation with Jalen after the game. He's going to run the ball better. Jalen Daniels is a very, very good runner. He's a powerful runner. I think he was a little hesitant because of the stage, but Jalen's going to run the ball better. He's obviously, everyone saw his arm strength. He's going to be efficient in the pass. He's a smart guy. He seldomly turns the ball over. So you're going to see an efficient, powerful, strong quarterback in the future.
When you and I talked last week, something you said that really stood out to me is one of the times you recently spoke with him, he talked about how much he liked his teammates. How important is that for a quarterback?
Oh, my God. I mean, just in terms of your confidence, just in terms of being able to be supported, you can go out there and make mistakes knowing your teammates got your back. You know, it's gonna help his progress. It's going to expedite that progress, you know. But he's in love with his teammates. He's in love with his coaches. And for me, that was the best thing that I've heard from him since he's been in Kansas, the fact that he's in love with the place. The kid's a real Jayhawk, and I'm real proud of him.
Something you said also last week that I thought was interesting, you know, when kids make the transition from high school to college, you always wonder how they're going to handle it. And you talked about how tough you were on him and that you got on him at times. How will that prepare him?
Oh, God. You know, I think Coach Dierman has a different style. You know, I was a yeller screamer. And I remember, you know, I just recall talking to my coaching staff, saying, hey, you know, I need somebody to be the peacemaker because when I'm losing it, I want people to keep Jalen calm. You know, but every time my coach was in charge of that, he would say, hey, Coach, Jalen's fine. You're yelling doesn't bother him. He's calm. So, you know, just having that tough skin, that thick skin, especially on that level in the Big 12, where I know Kansas wants, I know where they want to go. You know, they want to take it back to the Mangino era, like when I had Charles Gordon, who's actually, I don't know if you know this, Charles Gordon is our offensive coordinator and coached Jalen in high school last year as well.
I did know that. Former number three of the Jayhawks.
I coached Charles Gordon in high school at Santa Monica as an assistant and helped him get to Kansas. And he's a great player. And he and Jalen are very similar in terms of personality. So I would say, hey, Charles, I need you to talk to Jalen when I'm yelling. He says, hey, Coach, he's fine. You can yell at him all day. He's not taking it bad at all. So Jalen's got thick skin, and I'm really excited about the future.
Yeah, I knew Charles was there. Jalen and I talked about that, and obviously, you know, Charles was kind of the staple of those early Mangino years where that team and that program started building.
Exactly. Charles Gordon was a two-way starter. He played high school and played safety and receiver. He went to Kansas and started at corner and wide receiver and punt returner. So, yeah, he was definitely a staple. He actually really turned – helped. There was a lot of great guys on that team. He helped that program turn around. So I can see Kansas, you know, trending in that direction. You know, Coach Dierman's a heck of a coach. Obviously, Coach Miles. But I think Coach Dierman offensively is going to do some great things with that program.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate you joining us, and hopefully you guys get to play some football in California during this school year.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I appreciate you guys and Rock Chalk, man.
Take care, Coach.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
It's a small world to think that that man coached both Charles Gordon and Jalen Daniels, two players who are about 18 years apart in age, but both have already, you know, one of them obviously was a hero in that Tangerine Bowl team that Mark Mangino took with Bill Whittemore at the quarterback position, and Jalen Daniels may be the most talked about player this season for the Jayhawks. Let's shift gears a little bit, Kirby. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of the Kansas football program here, and let's look at what you want to see this weekend. It's homecoming. What kind of matchup does Oklahoma State bring to Lawrence?
Well, Randy, unfortunately, I don't think it's a good matchup. You know, I've been talking to people these last couple days that cover Oklahoma State, and I've had a chance to watch them their first two games. And the people that I've talked to think this might be Oklahoma State's best defense since 2011. So, number one, that's not a good sign. And some people think that they've actually won their first two games. The defense has won the games. Well, that isn't what Gundy's known for. Gundy is known for putting up points, good-looking offenses, exotic offenses. So the fact that Oklahoma State's defense is that good, you know, that's not the greatest sign. Also, their special teams the first 2 weeks have been lights out. So that's another matchup that Kansas is going to have to pick up. Now, the question is going to come down to this. And again, this is going to be a lot. This is going to put a lot of stress on the Kansas defensive coaches and DJ Elliott. You've got Sanders, who's a dual threat guy. That is your read option. They're going to keep the ball with him. They're going to get him out. They're going to move around with him. And their offense really gets going there. And then you've got Illingsworth, who's the freshman that's been taking over for Sanders while he's been injured. He's more of a true pocket passer. He's going to throw the ball around the yard. Somebody, you know, somebody told me it was like a J.W. Walsh back when Oklahoma State was there, and they ran around and they did all kinds of things. And then Mason Rudolph sat in the pocket. That was the comparison that was given to me. So if Sanders is playing, I think he's tougher on the Kansas defense, because it's just one more thing that you've got to be alert to is the fact that he can run. So, you know, they've got a bye week after the Kansas game. It sounds like Sanders is supposed to take most of the reps later in the week here. So we're going to see how this goes. And then some people think that Illingsworth is good enough to go into Lawrence, beat Kansas, give Sanders this week off and the next week off with the bye. So that'll be very interesting. They've got the weapons. I mean, they've got Wallace on the edge receiving. They've got Hubbard. I'll tell you what, the backup running back, I'll tell you what, he's really good. So Oklahoma State has the weapons. They've been banged up on the offensive line. So that could be something to watch, because they haven't been lighting the scoreboard up like some of the Gundy teams do. But they're a very solid team. And I'm concerned about how good their defense is, and I'm concerned about how good their special teams has been.
Okay, with all that being said, then what's your prediction for Saturday?
Well, like I said, the matchup, I just don't think favors Kansas, because I think this Oklahoma State team that might have the best defense they've had in 10 years can stop you. And, you know, Kansas is going to have to win games, I believe, in the 20s, and I just don't know if that's going to happen in this one. Sanders is more of a matchup problem, but Illingsworth is still going to be capable of leading their offense. If you just look at this thing man-to-man, position-by-position, I don't like the game. It is the first road game for Oklahoma State. I just think they're the better team. I'm going to go Oklahoma State 38, Kansas 20. Okay, hey, I want to bring this up, Randy. What did you predict last week was going to be the score in Kansas-Baylor?
I took the Bears 42-14.
Whoa, you almost hit that.
I was really close.
You know, all right, what do you think this week?
You know, I'm not optimistic, and having seen that OSU defense and knowing what their skill position players are capable of, and like you said, you know, their defense may have won their first two games for them. That offense hasn't quite hit stride yet. I think OSU is coming into Lawrence, and they're going to get healthy at KU homecoming. I think 49-14 OSU.
Wow, you're going big time blowout.
Yeah, and I hate to say that. I do. You're talking about programs that are in completely different places right now. Oklahoma State is a team that, with OU losing to Kansas State last weekend, is now the front runner likely in the Big 12, and maybe the last best chance the conference has to get a participant into the college football playoff as early in the year as we are. And they have a defense that looks like it might have some of the pieces to be able to compete at that level. I don't know. I think this could be a chance for them to get healthy, get Chuba Hubbard on track, get that offense rolling. And I think it's a bad time for the Jayhawks, and it's not going to be much fun on homecoming. So let's switch up. We're going to go back to something that we haven't done in a while, Kirby, on this podcast. You made a post today asking people to submit their questions on the message boards. And this week we had some subscribers post those things that they wanted to know about. And I'm going to throw them out to you. We're just going to go kind of rapid fire. You ready to go?
Let's go.
Okay. So from FB Hawk, he asks, are there any new recruit names coming into the class that we should be aware of?
No, not yet. And my answer to that would be, I hope there's not. So, you know, because if there is, Randy, then that means they've probably had some decommitments or lost guys or feel that they're going to lose guys. I will jump ahead and talk about the 2022 class and say the name to watch would probably be Amarion Dickens from Arkansas. He's a kid that I think is close to committing to KU. He's an athlete, wide receiver, D-back, state track kid as a freshman. So he's one to watch for 2022.
John Douglas 1 asks if you can grade the linebackers after two games, how you think they've played as a unit, if you think there will be improvement, and if this is just what we have to endure for the whole season.
Yeah, when you grade the linebackers, Randy, it really is. It's like two different grades. The first game, I thought the starters played pretty well. I thought Drew Prox played really well against Coastal Carolina. Against Baylor, I didn't think the starters played very well. As a matter of fact, I thought the backups, Potter and Dineen, maybe looked better than the starters did. So is it something you're going to have to endure? You know, I don't know. It's going to come down to guys staying healthy, guys staying off the old COVID watch list and things like that. But, you know, I think Kansas has enough linebackers that they'll play well. But, you know, so far it's been a mixed review there.
Okay. Any Crimson asked, can the special teams be fixed this season in defending the kickoff return game? Or do we have to wait another year for more bodies or a kicker that consistently put it in the end zone?
Yeah, you know, the kicking off has been kind of inconsistent. You know, one time you look up and they put it 8 yards deep, and then the next time you look and they kick off and they field it at the 20. So that is something that needs to improve. You know, on the special teams, I thought it was interesting that Les Miles said in his press conference that the kickoff, the first kickoff return for a touchdown was basically one guy. He pinned it on one guy, didn't mention any names, got out of his lane, and he said that was the cause for that.
Uh-huh. Anybody that's been around coaching and specifically coaching the special teams knows that's literally all it takes. If lane discipline is lost, you're sunk. And that's exactly what happened. Okay, moving on from Top Hawk. With all the tight ends that we've recruited, will we start to use them more?
You know, that's a good question. It really is. If you look at the tight ends, there hasn't been a lot of traditional lining up in the tight end. It's been more of an H-back type. And I think a big job for them this year so far is helping out the offensive line. They've been chipping on their blocks. They've been helping out a little bit for protection. So I think one of the things that's going to happen is the offensive line is going to have to step up and play a little bit better. And until that H-back or tight end might need to be used and utilized to help block a little bit, especially if the other team's got a defensive end that's really legit coming off the edge just to help chip and give some help to an offensive tackle or an offensive lineman.
Jeffro, and I don't know if it's Jeffro Spin or Jeffro SPN, but Jeffro asks, which child does he need to sacrifice to get the football gods back on KU's side?
Well, don't give your child up. You know, Randy, hey, listen, the football gods, we joke about this all the time. I mean, 10 years, you know, I mean, you just sit here and think, you know, like I said, it's 17-7, right? And you're thinking Kansas is in this game on the road, and then the halftime kickoff goes and you look up and he goes, there it goes. There goes 24-7, and there goes the farm. Everything's yep. Gone. So, you know, at some point, you know, Kansas is going to start getting some breaks. I just don't know when that's going to be.
KUAIC asks what the latest is on Stephon Robinson. Is he healthy?
That I do not know. I have asked around. I have not heard any answers. I hope he is, because I think he's a guy that stretches the field for KU. I think he's a deep threat. I think he's also a guy that you can line up in the slot, get him the ball, and he can do some things, some yak, you know, yards after catch. So, and he is a senior leader up there that those guys look to. So hopefully he is healthy, but I have not heard anything on that.
Any of the freshman linebackers close to being able to play?
You know, I haven't heard that. You know, you've got a starting unit right now of linebackers of Prox and Feaster, and then you've got, which I said, the second unit of Dineen and Potter looked pretty good behind them. So right now, your linebackers, your true linebackers, not counting the outside rush guys, seem to be, you know, the sophomores and up right now. So I don't know if there will be any injuries, any guys get on that COVID list that would force some of them into playing. But right now, I would say no unless something changes.
Okay, quarterback question. Would you start McVitie if he's healthy and let him go until the game is out of reach? Or would you start Daniels and get him as many reps as possible from the very beginning?
Well, the first thing, if I'm talking like I'm Brent Dearman, I would play the guy that gives me the best chance to win. And that's what Dearman's doing. I've had people say, oh, he's going to play his recruit. No, Brent Dearman is in the business to win football games. And if the guy that he didn't recruit looks the best, then he's going to play him. But obviously, between the bye week and getting snaps for Daniels, he did what it took to win the starting job. There's one thing that really stood out to me. They're getting beat. They're getting blown out. The game's out of reach. It's the fourth quarter. They could have easily told Miles Kendrick, hey, get your arm loose, put your helmet on, get ready to go in the game. You're going to run these last two or three series for us. But they didn't. They stuck with Daniels. And when they stuck with Daniels, that told me right there and then, that's their guy. That's the guy they're going to go with. Now, again, I don't know if McVitie's health changes that thinking. I don't think it does. But when they went with Jalen Daniels and he started that whole game and he took him right down the field until the last, you know, the last second ticked off, they were down at like the Baylor 20 and they were trying to score there late. That told me that, hey, this is our guy.
That does it for the question segment. Now let's talk a little bit of recruiting. Kirby, I know we talked a little bit earlier. I had a question about the 2021 class, and I know that we are just about full. Like you said, as you know, we probably won't hear any new names as long as people stay committed because we think we're about done. With that in mind, though, what are you hearing on the recruiting trail? Does it look like guys are solid? I mean, what's the latest?
Yeah, Randy, you know, so far it looks like guys are solid, but that's the thing with recruiting, and I know you followed it throughout the years. A recruit can be talking to another college coach, and you never know about it until you see it on Twitter or something comes up where he says, I have decommitted, no interviews, you know, that whole thing.
Please respect my decision.
Please respect my decision. So, as far as I know, everybody's been great. Everybody's been real receptive. Everybody's still been positive on Kansas. And, you know, right now, Randy, we're in a weird stage because we had all that time with COVID that the kids were at home and the coaches were doing Zooms. And, I mean, these guys were recruiting every hour, every day until all of a sudden they said, all right, we're going to start the season. And then the high school kids started getting word throughout the country, hey, you're going to start your season. Now, I know they all aren't playing in every state, but now things are getting back to a little normal on schedule. And this is when things slowed down a little bit. Okay, first of all, the 2021 class is almost wrapped up. So, you know, the coaches are coming in the morning. They're working on schemes. They're working on practice schedules. They're working on winning a game this Saturday. Their focus isn't really on recruiting. Second of all, if it was, their recruits, they're now in school, whether they're in class, whether it's online, and it's harder to get a hold of them. Then they're going to practice. Okay, I just got off the phone just a little bit ago. I talked to Ben Easters, and he made the comment that, you know, him and Dearman have been texting more because they aren't talking as much because Dearman's busy, Easters is busy, and they don't have as much time on their hands. So, you know, John House, safety, went to Vanderbilt. Not a huge surprise. I thought it was either going to be Michigan or Vanderbilt. I knew a few weeks ago, I knew Nebraska was in there, but I think they faded out. You still have a D-line spot that could go to Mandela Tobin or Jarrell Boykins. The key is hanging on to everybody in this class and, you know, stay focused on finishing it out. And This is a big thing that I say is keeping some players warm. I think you want to make sure you keep a couple offensive linemen warm that we don't know about. Maybe a rush in, maybe a lineman, because you never know who's going to pop up and decommit. It can very easily happen. This is a time we've never seen. Kids were committing to schools all around the country to get a spot in line during COVID. So you never know how things are going to develop. And if you do lose a player, you want to have a guy there that you've kind of been keeping warm that you can jump in on. And then obviously prepare for 2022. They've got a great recruiting staff at Kansas. These guys have done a good job. There's over 250 kids they've already offered in the 2022 class. So it's kind of a dual duty. You know, you keep what you got in 2021 and then look forward to 2022.
You mentioned the name Jarrell Boykins is one of the main recruits the staff is focused on and going after at this point. What better way to end the podcast than with Boykins himself coming on to close us out? Here's Jarrell joining John Kirby to talk about his recruitment and his interest in the Kansas Jayhawks.
We have a special recruiting guest who all KU fans will know. I'm joined by Jarrell Boykins, a defensive lineman who's being heavily recruited by the Jayhawks. Jarrell, how you doing?
Doing great. And you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Hey, tell us, how's the season going so far?
Our first game is this upcoming Friday. We had a scrimmage. It was great. Our defense was flying around.
So you guys are getting the late COVID start. Just what's it feel like to be able to get back on the field after all that time off?
It feels great. It feels great. I was I'm just glad I get to get my senior season.
You know, let's talk recruiting in Kansas. Quan Drake is one of the main coaches recruiting you. Talk about the relationship you have with him and how's that all been going?
It's been great. I've seen him around the school since my sophomore year. He started talking to me heavily in my junior year, you know, and we talk a lot. He explains to me how he really wants me at Kansas, but he also wants my best interest, you know, school-wise, sport-wise, life-wise, you know. He really wants to see me succeed.
All right, you're from Louisiana, so obviously you're familiar with Les Miles. You know, just talk about the conversations you've had with him. What are your thoughts on what he's doing with the Kansas program?
I've talked to him a lot, but I've always looked at Les Miles as, like, one of the greatest coaches because, you know, I grew up knowing LSU football, Les Miles. And when he left, you know, he was still a big name for Louisiana. And whenever I do talk to him, we have good talks about life and how he sees me at certain NFL players, you know. And he explains to me, like, he really wants me at Kansas and that he offered me, like, he said, yeah, I know you already had an official offer, but I'm offering you again just to know that you have a scholarship from Kansas.
You know, what are some of the other schools right now that are heavily involved with you?
I have Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas State. Those are my five official scholarships. But I also have, like, Virginia, Memphis, UCF. I have those schools under my belt, too.
In the whole big recruiting picture, you know, how's everything going? Have you thought about a timetable when you'd like to make a decision, or is that something that you just kind of want to come natural?
With COVID, you know, not allowing them to have official visits right now, it's really hard for me to analyze, you know, schools. Like, I can analyze the academics and a football team, but, you know, to get a feel for the community and the campus itself, you know, you really got to be there to get the true feel. So right now I really have to analyze a lot, like really deep into every school. So right now I really don't know when. I couldn't even give you a day. I know for sure it's going to be after the season.
You know, I know you guys are, you know, you're relegated to Zoom calls and everything but the visits. You know, when you start narrowing your list down and getting closer to a decision, what are some of the things you're looking for in a school? What's important to you?
First off, I want to have a great coaching staff that and Kansas has that. I've seen that. Great community, great academics. Of course, I would like to play my freshman year, but I know how college works. But when it comes to that, I really just want a school that has my best interest at heart and sees me as more than just a football player.
Well, Jarrell, I know you're good luck getting ready to start your season up here, and I look forward to talking to you again, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Jarrell Boykins, and that will do it for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast from Jayhawksland.com. Thanks to all of our guests, including Brandon McAnderson, the voice of the KU football sidelines on the Jayhawk Radio Network, joined us for the second straight week to talk about the game against Baylor and preview the matchup with Oklahoma State. Be sure and check out the message boards. The Memorial Stadium Slant Suite is always there for our premium subscribers. If you're not a Jayhawk Slant subscriber, what better time to join than now? Football season is in full swing, and basketball is just about to start with Bill Self and the boys. Get signed up right now to our publisher and the man with the plan, John Kirby. I'm Randy Withers. We'll speak to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawksLand.com.